Hey folks, this is Toby Sumter with Cross Politic Daily News Brief for Tuesday, January 28th, 2020. The left takes aim at conservative judges. Shock. Josh Hammer, editor-at-large of the Daily Wire, writes, "The Judicial Conference of the United States, an arcane body established by Congress and led by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, is responsible for helping establish the national policy guidelines that govern the administration of federal courts. Alas, the conference is arcane no longer. Over the past week, the conference's Committee on Codes of Conduct, which oversees federal judicial ethics, has forced a national conversation by launching an absolute wrecking ball of a draft advisory opinion. The committee, which is chaired by Judge Ralph Erickson of the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals, has 15 total members, 8 Democratic presidential nominees, 5 Republican presidential nominees, and 2 others. The committee's advisory opinion, if formally implemented by the committee, would, quote, advise that formal affiliation with both the Federalist Society and the American Constitution Society is inconsistent with the governing code of conduct for United States judges. Specifically, the committee states that, quote, although neither the Federal Society or the American Constitution Society is a political organization, under the code, their activities nevertheless implicate the code's broad prohibition against political activity, unquote. Whatever that's supposed to mean, Hammer notes. What's worse, the draft opinion also holds that federal judges, law clerks, and staff attorneys must not join either one. On the other hand, membership with the leftist American Bar Association does not raise these same concerns and is not necessarily inconsistent with the code. On the other hand, membership with the hard leftist American Bar Association, quote, does not raise these same concerns and is not necessarily inconsistent with the code, unquote. Hammer points out that the Federalist Society is the real target in this. The Federalist Society is known for its conservative judges, but Hammer points out the Federalist Society takes no positions on political issues, but rather exists solely in defense of an originalist interpretation of the Constitution. That is, that words have definite, objective meanings, and they should be interpreted according to those meanings as understood at the time of their writing. This shared commitment leaves room for much discussion and debate among originalists. By contrast, the left-leaning legal associations, the American Constitution Society and the American Bar Association, frequently publish many legislative opinions across the political policy spectrum and generally hold that the Constitution is a living document. That is, that it may be interpreted according to the changing whims of American culture. Hammer finds the notion that the American Bar Association does not raise these same concerns ludicrous. He also points out that the long-term effect of something like this will discourage young conservative law students from joining the Federalist Society, leaving them with fewer networking opportunities, generally fewer jobs, and likely additional pressure to keep their opinions or questions to themselves. No doubt, much of this is a result of Trump's aggressive work to rebalance the American judicial landscape. To date, he has nominated 239 individuals, of whom 187 have been confirmed by the Senate. As of January 2, 2020, there were 80 vacancies and 35 had pending nominations. Most, if not all, of Trump's judicial nominations have been members of the Federalist Society. Hopefully, Supreme Court Justice John Roberts will intervene. Next up, sanctuaries for the unborn. CNN reports that there are now 10 towns in Texas that have voted to declare themselves sanctuary cities for the unborn, with most adopting ordinances that outlaw abortion within their city limits. At least 13 cities are considering such ordinances, and 3, Mineral Wells, Omaha, and Jacksboro, have already voted against them. Most of the towns that have enacted the pro-life ordinances have populations of less than 6,000 people. None of them have abortion clinics at this time. The town of Wascom, with a population of 1,900, became the first sanctuary city for the unborn last June, according to the movement leading the charge across Texas. The town of Gary, with a population of 300, became the latest one last week. While Mark Lee Dixon, leader of the Sanctuaries for the Unborn movement and the director of Right to Life of East Texas, was quoted by CNN claiming that the criminal penalties included in these sanctuary legislations would only be retroactively applied if Roe v. Wade is overturned, I don't really trust CNN's ability to report news. And it hasn't generally been considered lawful to prosecute people retroactively. But regardless, there are at least two things to applaud here and encourage in the Sanctuary City movement. First, the goal for sanctuary cities should initially be something like the Underground Railroad. And this means that cities that pass these ordinances really need to be thinking broadly about how they will actually support these ordinances as communities. The goal should be to have as many citizens and local businesses and lawyers and law enforcement officers committed to defending life and providing for those in need. These important steps toward resisting unjust laws need the support of entire communities. This support should be thought out in terms of providing for mothers in need, sort of a citywide pro-life network that can provide shelter, counseling, prenatal care, food, clothing, and even assistance after the birth of children, including jobs and housing and so forth. Sanctuary cities need to give thought to how they will actually be sanctuaries for the unborn and for mothers and families in need. It may not be long before mothers and families are literally running for help and support to these cities, and if that happens, you better believe that the legal pressure will come against these cities with even more force. And that leads to my second point, which is that we really do need civil magistrates who are willing to play chicken with the judges and federal enforcers of unjust laws. But again, this requires community support. This requires many people standing together, having the backs of their civil magistrates. This need not come to violence. There's a long and venerable history of peaceful civil disobedience that needs to be cultivated in our cities and counties and states with regard to abortion, sexual morality, and marriage, among other things. To our great shame, only Kim Davis, a Kentucky county clerk, stood her ground in 2015 following the Supreme Court's hilarious Obergefell decision claiming that two dudes can apparently get married. Citing personal objections and conscience to homosexual marriage, Kim Davis began denying marriage licenses to all couples in order to avoid issuing them to homosexual couples back in August of 2015. A lawsuit followed, and Davis was ordered by a U.S. district court to start issuing marriage licenses. She appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, but her application was denied. So Davis, being a faithful Christian, continued to defy the court's order. She was ultimately jailed for contempt of court. Davis was released 5 days later under the condition that she not interfere with the efforts of her deputy clerks who had begun issuing those marriage licenses in her absence. Davis then modified the Kentucky marriage licenses used in her office so that they no longer mentioned her name. May the Lord be pleased to raise up thousands and millions of Kim Davises who are willing to cheerfully defy the insanity and injustice of our courts. If we want to resist, if we want to play chicken with these unjust laws, we need whole cities and counties and perhaps, Lord willing, very soon, whole states standing together. Businesses, law enforcement officers, lawyers, stores, gas stations, property owners, everyone standing together, peacefully resisting the murder of unborn babies, sodomite mirage, drag queen story hours, government schools, all this unbiblical nonsense. This peaceful resistance will at least make their lives really difficult. the lives of these leftist fascists. And I think that's a very godly thing to do. Finally, the Wuhan coronavirus is making headlines. The U.S. State Department has ordered personnel working at the U.S. Consulate General in Wuhan to depart for the United States, a State Department official told CNN in a statement, with a flight currently scheduled to leave on Wednesday. As of now, 82 people have died and more than 2,700 cases have been confirmed, including 13 places outside of China. Nearly 60 million people are currently affected by full or partial lockdowns in Chinese cities. 5 cases have now been confirmed in the U.S. China's health minister reported Sunday that the virus can spread even before symptoms show, making it even more difficult to contain. Coronaviruses are common in many different species of animals, including camels and bats. Rarely, these coronaviruses can evolve and infect humans and then spread between humans. This is why coronaviruses are called zoonotic, meaning they are transmitted between animals and people. Common signs of infection include fairly ordinary cold and flu symptoms with somewhat more intense respiratory issues. And now, everyone listening with a cold wonders if they're infected. But moments like these are good reminders that human beings are but a breath. The Lord took Kobe Bryant and his daughter and their friends in an unexpected moment this last weekend, and God rules every atom, every germ, every virus in his perfect wisdom. God has struck nations with plagues before, and there is no reason why he couldn't do it again. Despite all of our medical advances, for which we ought to be very grateful, God is still sovereign and men are still smoke in the wind. While God has sent plagues and judgment on men for their wickedness, plagues have also been moments of glorious opportunity for followers of Christ to serve and love the sick and dying. In the early church, Christians became famous for their care of the sick and dying in various Roman plague outbreaks. When pagans left their family members behind, Christians cared for the abandoned, no doubt leading many of them to a saving knowledge of Jesus in the process. And of course, many of those same Christians succumbed to the sicknesses themselves, not considering their own lives more valuable than the glory of laying them down for the cause of Christ. Whatever becomes of this Wuhan coronavirus, may the Lord find each of us faithful at our tasks each day, gladly laying our lives down in obedience to our King, fearless of death, because our King has suffered in our place, and now he holds the keys of death and Hades, and now we can never die. This is Toby Sumter with your Cross Politic Daily News Brief for Tuesday, January 28th, 2020. You can find this show, past episodes, and all the rest of the shows on the Fight Laugh Feast Network at crosspolitic.com. If this is a helpful resource for you, please consider sharing it with a friend, and even better, consider becoming a club member. Not only will you be supporting this work, you will also get exclusive access to a number of behind-the-scenes interviews, masterclasses, and more. Hope to see you tomorrow.